First I was a Catholic girl, loved the mass, I watched the swirl of smoke from candles burning, while Mary looked up yearning.
Hello and welcome to the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on WOZO Radio 103.9 LPFM here in Knoxville, Tennessee. We're recording this on Sunday morning, January 14th, 2024. I'm Larry Rhodes, or DJ Doubter 5. And as usual, we have our co-host Wombat on the line with us. Hello, Wombat.
He dribbles, he shoots the three, he scores!
Yeah, that's Wombat. Always scoring. Excuse me. Our guests today are Keith Simple, welcome, and the Dread
Hello.
Pirate. Dread Pirate Higgs, all the way from Western Canada, at minus 37 degrees Celsius.
Yeah, it's pretty darn cold.
Really cold, America.
Yeah, my goodness. Digital Free Thought Radio Hour is a talk radio show about atheism, free thought, rational thought, humanism, and the sciences. And conversely, we'll also talk about religion, religious faiths, Pastafarianism, gods, holy books, and superstition. And if you get the feeling you're the only non-believer in your town, well, you're just not. Here in Knoxville, in the middle of the Bible Belt, we have a group of over 1,100 of us. We're the Atheist Society of Knoxville, or ASK, and we'll tell you more about us after the mid-show break. So be sure to stick around. Wombat, what's our topic today?
I want to talk about growing pains and why hobbies that we take on also have sort of like the glory and the guts, the great stuff and the not so great stuff, the cool and the complicated. We're going to talk about it.
Yeah, also the philosophical growth. And,
true.
Personal.
You gave me an alliteration. I can't listen. The philosophical and the factual. I don't know what you want.
There you go. That works.
But as you expand, you'll tend to like hit barriers and that push your comfort zones into mandatorily new areas. And we'll talk about how that's part of growing pains and why it's important to still stress yourself in that capacity. But before we do, I'd love to go into our first entree of the talk today, which is our own noodly passage by our own Dread Pirate Higgs. Would you mind leading us in our weekly invocation?
Our noodly lord, who art in a colander, El Dante be thy noodles. Thy blood be rum, thy sauce be yum with meat, as it is with vegetables. Give us this day our garlic bread, and forgive us our cussing, as we forgive those who cuss against us. And lead us not into ketoism, but deliver us some carbs, for thine are the meatballs, and the sauces, and the grogs, whenever and ever.
Oh man. Keith is getting into this too. Keith, wonderful to have you on the show again. You're looking in super high fidelity than ever before. What's different?
Oh, I have a nerd friend. That's pretty much it. I have a friend who understands how cameras work. That's pretty much it.
Are you calling in from like a DSLR setup? I mean, there's like a really nice bokeh behind you and everything. Like what do you do?
Yeah. So I've been updating all my stuff for the podcast, you know, so like the computer's new, the camera's got a real high end lens, you know, and everything.
Wow.
And it self-focuses, which is why you got such a good chin earlier. Just that chiseled chin for you, you know?
Nice.
It's all coming together. I mean, literally, like I said, you know, because I it was a late one for us. Plus the drive home last night was white knuckle, white knuckle. It's not quite as cold as where Dread is, but it was minus 10, I think. So it was pretty brutal.
Wow.
Is that an Irish accent?
Yes, sir.
Ah, okay.
Oh, Dread, have you guys not met before? Okay, so Dread, no. Yeah, this is Keith Simple.
A musician.
More than welcome to chime in.
Cool.
The reason why his chin's so chiseled is he's a professional singer, multi-music music artist, but, you know, constantly uses his jaw for smiling, promos, and singing the true gospel. He's, if I can use this appropriately, sort of like a... you do music that speaks to the truth of being secular minded, particularly in a world that's covered in dogma, right? Would you mind talking about that?
Yeah, I'd love to. Holy moly. So I do have a band called the Siberian Dread that's like allows me to talk about all this stuff. You know, it, like the single we just released, it, actually, I think you guys, I should send you the link if I didn't already. I think maybe some of you guys did see it, but it's called Wrong Turn. And it's basically a metaphor for going too far right in your politics, essentially, and how that leads to bad choices and bad decisions on all things moral and all things political. The more right you get, the more things become black and white instead of gray, which is what all things really are. All morals dilemmas are always like there's right and wrong, but there's also a million kind of okays in between. And just like when you see a bunch of hominids or homo skulls, you can't tell which one is actually human and which one isn't because there are just too many gray areas of choice.
It's,
you know?
It's exactly a spectrum rather than a dichotomy, right?
Right.
Right. And everything is like, yeah, every decision or every moral dilemma is always that way. I've never been presented with one that isn't okay. There's definitely a kind of a strong morals positive end and a strong negative end, but there's all sorts of choices in between I can think of that aren't necessarily black and white. Yeah.
And what's just to touch on that, just a quick thing. A lot of times with science is we generate models to help simplify or make difficult concepts more utilizable, right? So like I might make a map that's flat that I could use for transporting myself from one city to another city, but it's using a flat earth model to get me to where I need to go. It's not calculating the curvature in every hill or the curvature of the earth because I don't need to know that to get from here to McDonald's, right? But that model is not what real reality is. And oftentimes in science, we will come up with models to dictate how social things should work or how statistics on groups of populations might work. And we need to recognize that the model might be black and white, but it is at best a caricature of what reality is. And there's always room for nuance if we're willing to continue to engage with more observation and realize that we can always improve the model to take in that nuance. But we should never be so standfast and say, nope, it's just this or that. This is the dichotomy. It's like, that's great, but even numbers aren't like, I can never have two apples. I throw this example out. I can never have two apples because there's always going to be slightly, what do we mean by a unit of apple? Like, is it based on mass? Because this apple is slightly more than this apple. This apple weighs more. This apple might be green. Are these the same thing? If they're not the same thing, how can I have two of them, right? So we need to understand that we come up with variables and those are at best just abstractions of reality. And we might have a very concrete model, but we still have very nuanced reality that we're placing that off of, which is why science is cool, because we can continue to engage and interact with stuff like that, or make music or make art based off of it. This is the beauty of being alive, like figuring out how the universe works with all of its nuance and taking it in and improving our understanding of the universe alongside it. Go ahead, Kate.
Tyrone, it's funny that you said, because that's also what it's like when I'm writing lyrics about this stuff, because, you know, you've got this very complex idea and then you've got to write a lyric about it. So it's got to be done in basically a line or two. And so, the metaphorical, it's how direct do you want to go to the point? And it's funny because in this song, for example, I actually get right to the point for a change. Normally I'm very metaphorical, but on this song, I'm like, you know, basically, you know, no God is going to be coming to sort this idea out for you. You've got to do it yourself. And it's all social human interaction that's going to decide whether a woman has rights to her reproductive system or not. It's, you know, if there was a God that cared about that stuff, he probably would have been more precise about what he wanted people to do. And and not 5,000 versions of each religion would all disagree. Like, I don't think Judaism has any problem with abortion, but I know that, you know, evangelicals sure do, but I don't think Islam does, for example. But yet they'll, you know, potentially chop your hand off if you steal. So big difference there, right? But it's supposed to be a black and white subject to some people, whereas, as we all know, it's a very complicated, very, hard decision for any woman to make.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, you know, like we invent these these representations to help us understand the world,
right?
And then conflate them with reality, without realizing it in many cases, and then acting as though our simplified notions of the world are in fact a direct representation of what we're trying to describe.
I think that's
half the problem.
That's so totally true. I also want to make sure I extend the favor from Keith to you, Dredd, because if you've never met Keith, let me explain why this guy's wearing a tricorn. He has, in my opinion, he believes in a cool God that, in the same way that models can be conflated with reality and we can overstep our ignorance or overstep our knowledge into ignorance. What the Flying Spaghetti Monster is, from my impression, is sort of a celebration of the fact that, hey, listen, you're not going to know everything. You're not going to understand everything. Here's a embodiment of that unknowingness, and it's not something to be afraid of. It's not something to obey or follow dogmatically. It's more of just a celebration of the fact that, hey, life is complicated. Go eat some spaghetti. Dredd, do you think that's fair?
Yeah, that's very good. And it also very apt and succinct description.
Yeah, it also means that you can't have a religion that's not authoritarian or autocratic. It's a religion that you rejoice in life.
Right. And if I'm willing to celebrate a dogmatic God, I also have to celebrate, you know, even the God of celebrating non-dogmatic thinking at the same time, too. It's an equal sharing field. And don't post one over the other, because the God that says, hey, you don't know, and nobody really truly knows, right, is saying, hey, everybody calm down. Let's just have some peace and eat some noodles. Go on ahead.
Yeah.
Oh, everybody. Keith.
So I was just going to say, I have, if you can see, not quite his noodliness, but I do have the invisible pink unicorn. Can you see that? Turn my wrist around.
Nice.
There.
Yeah.
Can you see
that?
There it is. Yeah.
For those who are listening on radio or podcast, we record this on Zoom and put it on YouTube. So you can see these images if you want to by looking for Digital Free Thought Radio.
I think you still have trouble finding the invisible pink unicorn regardless. But yes, you're right. We don't want to disappoint our listeners.
Well, it was funny because I actually posted when I got this. This was the first tattoo I ever got, because it was, you know, it was me in a nutshell, really. And I posted it online, and the lady who created it reached out. And she has a thing now called the Friendly Faces of Atheism, which I love, you know, a positive trying to show the world that we are just, you know, the four coolest dudes in the world. And, you know, and especially Dredd. And,
you know, pretty cool. He's pretty cool. He might be the coolest. That might be accurate.
I was, Dredd, just so you know, I was so tempted, and I still might get his noodliness somewhere. Nice. If I've got any room left on my skin, so we'll see.
Full support of that,
Dredd. I'd like to touch on this, because I think you hit something really interesting. We conflate our models that we come up with reality. You said we conflate them with reality. I find more often than not, it's charitable to say that we conflate them with reality. More often we conflate them with our biases,
and yes, typically, of course,
when we have a prejudice that we hold and we get a piece of data that we don't necessarily entirely understand, but we think it confirms something that we deeply hold to be true, we will just use that as an excuse to further help put more confidence in that prejudice rather than actual reality. More often than not, I've seen that.
Well, you know, I think at latest count, there's something like 287 recognized cognitive biases that have been described and defined. So that's a lot. And, you know, regardless of how well you think you think, you're still subject to biases that you don't necessarily recognize in yourself.
Yeah,
you always have to be on guard, essentially. You
always have to be on guard.
You know, good cognition and good reason and good logic is a matter of practice. It's not a matter of being gifted with it. You have to practice it. And so you have to always be sort of vigilant and on guard of your own thinking to make sure that these things aren't creeping in and shutting you down, right?
Yeah, for your own mental health too, I would say. Keith, it looks like you're about to say something.
Yeah, I was just going to say, Dredd, I wanted to ask you guys all this to get your opinion on what you just said, Dredd, is of course everybody has biases, but would you agree that the people who understand the concept of this and they understand, and I would call them skeptics like myself and probably all three of you, approach things in a way that minimizes the chances of being wrong. You see what I'm getting at? So like,
I hear what you're saying.
What do you think?
Absolutely. Well, isn't that the basis of the scientific method, right? Is, you know, you start with a hypothesis and then you develop ways to test whether that is false, you know, falsifiability, and then using Bayesian inference to update your priors and all that good stuff. I know that might be terminology, you know, some of the audience wouldn't recognize, but it's worth learning about for sure. And I agree 100%, Keith.
I'm going to throw this out. I think that the ability to not be wrong on things is sort of like falling into, or is sort of like driving on a flat road. Like, yeah, you are good on a level playing field. You're driving on a more or less pothole free road. But if you have a poor standard of evidence, it's almost as if you're falling into every pothole, every single crevice, every single crack in the pavement, right? But as you become educated and more skeptical, yes, you won't fall into as many grooves or potholes or imperfections in the road. However, you're still not immune from falling into deeper, you know, holes.
Yeah,
like
deeper
sinkholes and stuff like that.
So the hazards are still there. Your risk of running into them is lower by virtue of you being good at it.
Correct. You'll still have the same mechanics to pull yourself out as anyone else, but you still need to watch out. The way I always say it, like, smarter someone is, and they're still in like some sort of like cognitive dissonance, it's just a deeper level of cognitive dissonance.
Absolutely.
And because smart people are very good at convincing themselves that they're right. And that's and the smarter they are, the harder it is to get them back out of that sinkhole. Oh,
you know, I'll just mention, you know, I don't use this as a means to brag, but I am a Mensen, and I find that in that community, that's exactly what happens there, Wombat, is that these, you know, in many cases, there are people who think they're so smart that they've got it all figured out and are impervious to any kind of criticism or conflicting information. They just, you know, they're not willing to say, I don't know. Right. They think just by virtue of being intelligent that automatically grants them a sort of a level of rightness that, you know, we'll just think this out, you know, and, you know,
and it just doesn't work that way. Because pride is
very frustrating.
Keith?
I just wanted to give you guys a cool example of how the scientific method was effective recently for me. So I just got back from Ireland. I went literally as soon as New Year turned, we got on a flight. So it was, you know, a bit of a tiring few days, but my dad, I think I told you guys that my dad is a geologist. So it's what he's done his whole life. And, you know, he's a very good one. And all my daughters wanted to do when we got there was go fossil hunting, which is I told them about when I was young, is we have literally got, well, they're ice cream tubs, but you don't really have ice cream in the same format here. The way they sell it normally is like a tub about, you know, I'd say 8 inches by 6 inches deep type of a thing. Anyway, they're full. We've got literally thousands of fossils. And it was just the idea of, I loved having my daughters see science in real time and how a hypothesis is tested and becomes a verifiable thing. And then it's repeatable. It suggests that it could be true, but not always true, and so on. Right. So what happened was we went down to the beach where my dad, by the way, you guys would just love it so much. It's a geologist's dream. So it's basically a curious person's dream is, it used to be a volcanic area, Northern Ireland. It's not anymore, obviously. But when it was, you can see the line of the, I think it's the Cretaceous to Jurassic period, that literally the change between the stones coming down the side of the mountain and heading along the beach. And you see it just, it's black rock, black rock, black rock, and then light gray rock. It's one line of billions of lines of rock formation. It's incredible to see. But my dad was like, well, because of this here and the line, if we go down to this beach where this is, and we look just past into the sort of slightly softer clay that used to be under the water, but has now come up, what we should find is tons of sea life fossils that were around that time, which is 200 million years ago. So we go down to the beach. Now, I already know, of course, I've been down 1,000 times. It was a lifestyle for us, but the girls hadn't. And they went down and their eyes were just, they could not believe it. We moved one big rock. And my dad says, right, just dig in the thing. And within, I don't know, 5 minutes, they had 10 fossils each. Nice. And I mean, like, perfect little starfish and crustaceans and little things that have been sitting there or, you know, stuck in the same spot for 200 million years. And it just blew their mind because they're big dinosaur fans, you know, and it was like, this was alive. This was probably stood on by one while it was, you know, drinking or whatever. Like,
thanks for freeing me. Wait, don't put me in that ice cream tub. No.
Yeah, 200 million years I've been waiting.
It's okay. I can wait another 15 million years. Humans won't be along for long. All right.
Yeah, that's you won't be around as long. So, yeah, I just wanted to give that example, Dredd, of how, you know,
awesome.
You know, by hypothesizing of where things were, where the geological column was at that time, and knowing about how things have changed since, we were able to show my daughters just exactly where to look, and there's what they find.
Yeah, that's awesome. So you don't take the past for granted.
We get it. We get it, Dredd. Larry, you had mentioned something about science making prophecy.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of all these religions saying that they have prophets, you know, and that they can tell the future and stuff. But just that little simple example that Keith gave just a minute ago, it says, well, from this and this, this line of geologic rock here, if we follow this down, I prophesy that if we go to this place and look for fossils, we'll find it. It's just like they found that Precambrian fish from looking, you know, the one that theoretically walked from water to the land, because they knew the history of the area of Earth and knew which area to go to look for that particular exposed rock from that period, and they found it. Science-making prophecy.
Oh, no, you guys are wrong. Let me explain why you're wrong, Larry. Let me explain why you're wrong, Keith. Also, let me explain why you're wrong.
Please do.
That line of granite leading to the from black to white rock, that's God's ice cream tub. And the fossils that you found in there are simply because
it says marbled ice cream.
Yeah, are you putting on the Pope hat for us?
And put them in the ground, and you found them, and you think, oh, 200 million years, this. Like, no, that's just
I heard it ice was, cream tub. I heard it was Satan did it.
Okay. Have you noticed how they go through levels of cognitive bias? So, like, at first, it's like, no, it's not. That's not really a fossil. Then you show them how it's a fossil, and you show them how, and they're like, well, okay, is it? And then you show them how, but how do you know it's that old? And then you show them how dating works and how accurate it can be to within a few thousand years. And then each bias falls off, but it still maybe becomes, well, okay, it's a fossil, and okay, it's 200 million years old, but God must have put it there.
That's the damage.
Moving the goalpost.
Right. But moving the goalposts, that damage comes from the extra levels of indoctrination. If you get to people and teach them these critical tools before they even get indoctrinated, they'll jump on board with the first standard of good evidence that you can present to them. That's justifiable, falsifiable, testable, repeatable. They'll understand that. They'll eat that like I like to think of it as like a lot of people don't like vegetables. But there is a point in your life where you're like, hey, vegetables are pretty good. Like, your brain stops caring about sugar when you're a kid and starts thinking about long-term nutrients. And when you start realizing like the value of nutritious data, high quality data with a good integrity, you realize I'd rather have this than the promises that my pastor was telling me. Because even though the world doesn't tell me what I want to know, it does tell me things that I find to be far more reliable and that keep me more safe and keep me more in line with what I want. There's one last point I want to make before we break to the half, and then we can continue this conversation. In Tennessee, one of the Bible Belts of America, we have a bunch of rocks. The town that I'm living in has a bunch of rocks on both sides of the highway. You can stop by any of those highways, pull out a rock, almost at random, crack it, and you might find a really cool fossil called Constellara fabulosa. If we're speaking about fossils, it's one of my favorite ones. Really beautiful term. It's the back of a shell of an animal that lived about 140 million years ago. Sea life has stars embedded all the way around it. And it's a beautiful fossil. It's used by the oil industry because they will dig down until they find that fossil and then dig
right.
down further below that because they know that's where
know
oil
that.
Is.
Right.
Because they know, they may not sell it as much, but they know the fact of where you find these fossils, you will find oil underneath it. They understand the mechanics. And whether it's the people who actually do the digging or the people who benefit from them follow a more dogmatic view of the world is fine. But the scientists who know where to dig use that as your Keith, as
sure.
you're saying, that technology and that understanding.
You know, it's
I
like
just wanted to
for
show
gold,
you guys
right?
it real quick. Sorry, Drayton.
Oh, no, go ahead.
I just wanted to show you guys. My daughter brought them down for us to show you. I know some people won't be able to see if they're just listening in, but this should focus on this, I believe, if I get out of the way. Goes.
It's almost focusing. Oh,
that?
We see it. Yeah, it's nice, nice. It's like back end
a little
of the
rod.
There
you go.
We
there you go.
Pentagonal rod.
Well done.
And then here,
listeners, check out the show.
Here is a perfect starfish.
Oh yeah.
Oh, very cool.
And if you look,
wow,
you can see its little,
you know,
its little stems flower.
It
on
looks
it.
Like. It looks like me Lucky Charms. They're magically delicious.
Oh, I left those in Ireland. Darn it.
I say once per episode, some guest has to try an Irish accent. That's
right.
All it is.
Well, we need to take a break now. So
I'm 86% Irish, so. Yeah.
This
aren't
is the digital.
All, aren't we all, Dredd?
This is the Digital Freethought Radio Hour on WOCO Radio, 103.9 LPFM here in Knoxville, Tennessee. We'll be right back after this short break.
It seems to me the species Homo sapiens carries the chutzpah gene. To think they are the purpose of the universe when they only just arrived on the scene. What's even worse, they bear a curse of believing they're the only form of life to never die and go on living. Somewhere high up in the sky.
Somewhere high up in the sky.
So why don't bees go to heaven and trees go to heaven? Amoeba, krill and fleas go to heaven. It's not surprising that they're not arising, 'cause man created God.
This grain of sand upon an infinite beach had been supporting life for trillions of spins. Then along came humans who started assuming that this was where it begins. So profoundly naive, they began to perceive these primates were the only ones to never die and go on living. Somewhere high up in the sky.
Somewhere high up in the sky.
So why don't worms go to heaven and germs go to heaven? Spiders, snakes and sperms go to heaven. It's quite expected that they're not resurrected, 'cause man created God.
If man created Zeus
and the god of the sun,
if man created Shiva
and the god of Abraham,
from all of life, why should the only one saved be the
species worst behaved?
Well, that's because that same species, Homo sapiens, carries the chutzpah gene. To think they are the purpose of the universe when they only just arrived on the scene. What's even worse, they bear a curse of believing they're the only form of life to never die and go on living somewhere high up in the sky.
Somewhere high up in the sky.
So why don't whales go to heaven, snails go to heaven, orangutans and quail go to heaven? They don't think twice about paradise, because man created God. So why don't bees go to heaven and trees go to heaven? Amoeba, krill and fleas go to heaven. It's not surprising that they're not arising, 'cause man created God. So why don't worms go to heaven and germs go to heaven? Spiders, snakes and sperms go to heaven. It's quite expected that they're not resurrected, 'cause man created God. So why don't bees go to heaven and trees go to heaven? Amoeba, krill.
Hello and welcome back to the second half of the Digital Freethought Radio Hour. I'm Doubter 5, and we're on WOZO Radio 103.9 LPFM here in Knoxville, Tennessee. Let's take just a moment to talk about the Atheist Society of Knoxville. ASK was founded in 2002. We're in our 21st year now and have over 1,100 members. We have weekly in-person meetings every Tuesday evening in Knoxville's Old City at Barley's Tap Room and Pizzeria. Look for us inside at the high top table, or if it's pretty weather, outside on the deck. You can find us on Facebook, meetup.com, or go to our website at knoxvilleatheist.org, or just Google Knoxville Atheist. It's just that simple. By the way, if you don't live in Knoxville, you should still start a go to Meetup and find do a search for an atheist group in your town. Don't find one. Start one. Wombat, where do you want to pick up?
Hey, I wanted to talk. We were getting to science. I never want to impede that. When we slow down, we'll talk about growing pains to wrap up the show. But you were talking, Keith, about the beauty of fossils, educating your daughters on it, and getting them into the idea of like testing ideas over time. The value behind that being that, one, it makes them less likely to fall into potholes that are like fairly shallow as they grow up older, because they now have a good idea of how to be a good driver and how to navigate these things. But we also, as Dredd was pointing out, just because you've had the education doesn't mean that you now have wings on your car. You still can fall into much deeper holes. And in fact, the deeper the hole that you get into, the more effort it might even take to be pulled out. So this is sort of feeds into the idea of like, yes, it is less likely that you will find yourself stuck on the road of life if you have a good skeptical mindset, but it doesn't make you immune to folly, and you should always be vigilant. And typically, the more smarter you are, the less rickety your drive, but you're still just as vulnerable as anybody else. And so always question everything, because just because everybody in the room agrees doesn't mean it's good.
And it's about having a reliable methodology for testing and examining the things that you think are true.
Right. And also on a willingness to do that, use that strategy too. Because the best methodology in the world is useless if you're not willing to use it. Right?
Absolutely.
Right? Mm-hmm. Okay. So speaking of which, I was, I had a really, so I'm not as cool as Dredd. Dredd is, by the way, in a place that is negative 37 degrees Celsius.
At negative 36 right now.
Oh man, can someone do the math for me to figure out what that is in Fahrenheit? Is that like negative?
It's about.
Well, you know, I think at minus 40, it actually 40. There's some point at cold, you know, that where the scales actually meet.
Minus 40.
I can't remember what it is. But
wow,
-40 is where they meet.
-40 is where they meet.
I thought it was -40. Yeah.
All right, so this did come from a comedian, so I'm not telling a joke, but I did think it was very useful as a mnemonic to like figure out how Fahrenheit works and why it's useful for weather, because it's just basically percent hot. Like when it's 100 degrees Fahrenheit, it's 100% hot, right? When it's 50 degrees Fahrenheit, it's 50% hot. All right. That's a really easy mnemonic to like figure out. 0 degrees Fahrenheit, it's 0% hot. Like it's going to be really cold out, right? But negatives are when it starts getting really crazy. So like you're nearly at -40% hot. That my brain has already broken the scale. Like I can't even interpret that in my head. Yes. I'm like,
I'm much closer to absolute zero than you are.
Yeah. So like you're telling me I can get a 40% hotter and it's still super cold and we're still at near at 0% hot. Like that makes no sense. I don't understand it. Like that's really, really cold. Yeah. All right. Science is fun, guys. Speaking of which, this weekend I went out to go to a charitable event where a high school was hosting a robot challenge. The robot challenge is called the VEX Challenge, and the kids would build robots and come to an event from schools all around the state, come to this one school, and at the school, they will reveal what the challenge is. The challenge was to knock off cubes off certain areas of a track and drop them into buckets, and the kids had a robot that was multifunctional, and they'd have to design a program and design contraptions that can fit onto that robot that day of, or a couple of hours beforehand, to make the robot do the test that they were supposed to do. And I was a volunteer judge along with some of our coworkers and some other local businesses around the area. And we had a really good time interviewing a lot of different kids. What was interesting though, is there was a period of time before the kids came out to do their interviews with us and show us the robots where you get to talk to the different judges. And some of the judges were like old hats. They, you know, had been engineers for a long period of time. They retired. And we got to talk about like the nature of science and engineering and why it's wonderful to instill that in kids. And more, and I wouldn't say more often than not, but a lot of the times the people who I talk with would start to infuse, man, I'm just so blessed to be here. It's so good to see the glory of God in these children. And like, they're going to work hard to fix things like, you know, because the world isn't going in the right place, you know, like, you know, I just hope we're going to be good, but it's in God's hands. And I hope these kids can be, you know, like the shining light for our future. And the whole time I'm like, no, like God made the problem. God made the problem. The kids are going to solve it. Like, if God made everything, he made the bad things too. I'm willing to play with you as far as that goes. Like, if we agree that climate change and the reason why we need a sustainable future and why, and like an overpopulation, those are like God-given problems, it's going to be engineers and scientists who solve them and figure that out. And like, I even put my head down and was like, no, God made the problem. We're going to fix it. That's what our job is. Like, that's what we do. Like, that's, and you too, you're a part of it too, whether you recognize it or not. Like, we work together to fix that. And I realized, you know, even like now, that is sort of a blunt way of approaching that kind of a conversation, right? Though it is frustrating to have to deal with that a number of times. So I'm going through the growing pains of learning how to better talk to people about it. Right? Larry, I saw you raise your hand.
I was just going to mention that the whole field of medicine is addressing problems that God crossed.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Right, right. Yeah.
It's almost as if the growing pains of becoming an atheist is learning how to still stay engaged with the people who have those ideologies that you know not to be true anymore, right? That you know are faulty. And it's like, but I know emotionally where you're coming from. However, I know if I just give you the logical statement, it's not going to be of any use to you. And there's like a growing pain that comes with that. The idea of the additional empathy that you need to package logic to people. That's frustrating in its own right. It's a growing pain, but one worth going through. What do you think, Keith?
It's funny. I was just tying in both things. What you were saying there is I saw a great meme and I've seen versions of it. But basically, you know, it's some right-wing conservative person saying something along the lines of, oh, God created you as a man. Therefore, you know, you shouldn't be trying to change what you are, essentially, right? Is it an argument against trans people, right? Yeah. And then the person replies, well, and he's like, you know what? You're right. He's playing along. He goes, you know what? You're right. But you know what? You're wearing glasses. How dare you try to correct what God gave you?
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then he goes like, and you're using a hearing aid to hear. How dare you try to correct what God, and he runs down all this list of things that we, you know, very small things that everybody just takes for granted as being what are our sort of additions to, how dare you cut your hair? Mm-hmm. You know, just going to the extreme of it. And I just thought that was a brilliant way of, that argument particularly, but just showing you all the things that God, if he actually existed, got wrong as far as, you know, you couldn't even get eyesight right.
Yeah.
You know?
Right. You couldn't even get eyesight right, God.
Well, it's interesting, because they use the eye is often used as the irreducible complexity argument. And there you have it right there. Well, if it's, you know, so irreducibly complex that only a God could create it, why did he do such a bad job?
Right.
It's hilarious.
Make so many mistakes that we have to live
and
with.
Evolution has actually created the eye 40 odd different times. So
in
like
different ways,
different ways. Like, like obviously the eye has evolved.
Wings have come about three different ways, at least three different ways.
At least three.
At least four because of the pterodactyls, right?
Well, that's still at least three. If at least four and at least three would still fall in the same umbrella, right?
Yeah.
So when I do work for at my job, I always say it'll be 2 weeks or less. Even when people like show up at my door and like, we need it now. And I was like, yeah, it'll be ready in 2 weeks or less. They'll be like, but Ty, I need it now. 2 weeks or less is also now, right? I'm all about setting up the expectation window. And if I do it if I do it like tomorrow, it's done tomorrow, but that's 2 weeks or less still. Like, It makes people upset, but it also helps to standardize. Hey, don't just show up at my door with work, right? There's a standard.
Your lack of planning does not necessarily mean an emergency for me.
No, it's spoken like a well-trained IT guy.
That's a good one.
Funny. Tyrone, it's funny because you were saying about growing pains and about before we came on, we were talking, and it's just funny because I just had that conversation yesterday with the friend of mine who's also doing another podcast, and we're sort of growing together. And it was funny how, you know, I'm in my 40s now, and I know I don't look it, but I was like, I was just funny. In the last 3 weeks, I've learned so many new life skills that didn't exist when I was a child, but just because I've decided like things don't really get done unless I'm going to do it myself, kind of an attitude, and not being mad about that, just being understanding that the goal that you're setting, nobody else really cares about it. They can be positive and they can be encouraging, but the things that you want to achieve are solely your things. And so I've now mastered how to do, you know, like graphic design, so I can do really cool thumbnails for my podcast episodes. And like, I just did my last music video that's coming out in a couple of weeks. Yeah. I did it myself.
Oh, that's so cool.
And I did a green screen, which Dredd will appreciate. And I did a green screen, and I did like, I'm interacting with old 80s and 90s computer games. So I'm like falling off a cliff, and I'm flying through the air through all these computer games. I'm dodging the Space Invaders game where they're shooting at you and stuff. And I managed to get it all done just by basically, I didn't know how to achieve a thing. I would YouTube it. I would Google it, and I would figure it out. And somebody, you know, I would always joke, there's always some teenager who's already mastered it on YouTube. He just goes, well, here's how you do it. And and the talk about that mixture of growing pains, of knowing that you're a competent person, but understanding at the same time that there are people out there that have mastered skills that maybe 20 years ago we would all have considered to be like, who cares? But now they're literally life-changing skills, like being able to make really cool transitions in a movie or whatever. Now that person could be making an amazing living doing that, just because they've mastered that one skill that makes them employable or whatever. So I just wanted to say that I've been thinking about the whole growing pains thing of like, I feel like I'm starting again.
Yeah, it's you're investing in yourself and you're seeing those capital gains. But at the beginning, it's so small and a lot of work. But it at a certain point, the gains start to outweigh the effort that you're putting into it, to the point where you're just so fortunate that you had started in the first place, right? But there's that growing pain period, right? That makes it worthwhile. Larry, what's your thought?
Well, when we first started the growing pains topic, I was thinking more in line of as you grow from being taught, you know, religious ideas at the very youngest age, and then you learn that those ideas are not necessarily true, and then you find out they're pretty much false. And then you find out there's nothing magic, supernatural in the world. You just grow and you grow and you grow and but there are a lot of pains involved in that too. Because, I talk to people all the time online where their friends and family are falling away from them because they have grown past them. They can't really relate to them anymore. And I always try to tell them to find an atheist group in their town or find an atheist friends, because you'll find out that when you make these new friends, they will be valued friends. They will be not friends and family so much, because you pick your new families as you grow.
People who love the real you, right?
These pains,
version of yourself.
These pains have solutions, and the solutions are rewarding.
Yes, absolutely. Right. You can use the growing pains to find a true family that loves you, who you are, the whole you, the most authentic version of yourself.
And not just putting up with you.
Yeah. That feels
putting up with your legs, not just bearing with you.
Exactly what
They're not busy praying for you to come back to the fold.
Yeah.
And considering you a flawed sinner all the time that they interact with you.
if I can throw out something a bit more personal, I think it's also useful to go through the growing pains to better understand yourself. I'm asexual. What does that mean? It means I don't really experience sexual attraction. And for the longest period of time, I thought that meant that I was a straight person with something wrong with me, like a low libido, or like I'm straight, but there's something wrong with my hormones or balance. And maybe I just need to force myself to be in a relationship with somebody so that way I can like still, you know, act like the same as everybody else. And maybe it'll kick in eventually. Maybe there's some reason why I'm not attracted to girls.
And maybe you're the next step in evolution.
What's going on here? Yeah. So for a long time, all the way up until like my late 30s, I just thought there's just something wrong with me. I'm going to figure this out. Don't worry about it. And I've gone through a number of relationships, but like I felt like I was wasting other people's time because my goals or my interests didn't line up with what everybody else did or what they enjoyed doing. I only understood what asexuality was through, funny enough, like a YouTube search. And then I started going to a rabbit hole and I realized, similar how I did with atheism, that this term wasn't as scary as I thought it was, and that there was a term that applied to what my outlook was. And it wasn't just because, oh, well, I just didn't find the right girl. It was just simply, I'm just not attracted to people, period. Like, and that's okay. And it framed my entire mindset from something being wrong with me for the entirety of my life to, oh, I'm actually pretty normal. And there's other people who are just as normal as I am. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing wrong with me, and that I should just continue to love myself and be doing the things that I love to do and make myself happy and find people who appreciate me for being me.
And I'm express, like, you expanded your definition of normal.
And express different kinds of love.
Yes.
That's the fun story behind it. But what came with that was a lot of uncomfortable conversations that I felt like I needed to have about with people who would hear my story and say, oh, but there is something wrong with you. You just haven't found the right person yet. Or there is something wrong with you. Have you tried doing this or that? I'm like, no, you don't get it. The framework is completely different. It's sort of like talking to, I've had a good friend of mine tell me, oh, you just didn't find the right girl. And I said, you know, you're straight, you're married. Maybe you just didn't find the right man. Right? Like it's the same mindset. Nice. Though I have found people when I explain this to them, they're like, you're asexual, and the way you're describing it, it sounds like you have a superpower. It sounds like you just have an extra half hour a day where you're not horny and you can basically fill that in with hobbies. And now I understand why you got your PhD and you can play all these instruments and you have time to walk dogs. And you do, like, when I tell people about what I do on my weekend, they're like, how do you have time to do all this stuff? Disc golf, and you're learning how to rock climb, and you're learning how to swim, and you're doing it. It's like, where do you get the time? It's like, because I just have time.
You know, I don't know if you guys ever remember Seinfeld, the TV series. There's the episode where George stops having sex for a week, and all of a sudden he's the smartest guy in the group, right?
Yeah. I'm that guy 24/7, but I didn't realize that's not a problem, right? Yeah. It's just what you can do with your mind when it's focused, like incredibly focused on stuff. It's really great. Anyway, that's it. Oh, Keith, you, my friend, you're on mute. But anyway, the growing pains was worth it because I learned how to love the real me in that process. And, you know, when I came out to my mom like a couple of years ago, she was fully accepting of it. And that, for a Jehovah's Witness, was really, really powerful for me because she was willing to like overlook her own dogma to still appreciate me. And I have friends and I have work. I let my boss know. It's not a big deal in my mind as much as it was before. And I feel like the more I express it, the better it is to just live in my own skin. But yeah, that's about it. It's worth those growing pains.
Nice.
I was just going to tie what you and Larry had said together there with an example of the Catholic, I think it's the Catholic Church. They would often tell women to just deal with it in abusive relationships, you know, going to the other extreme. They would say like, oh, well, you know, divorce or whatever is a sin. So, you know, I mean, really, even in any kind of marriage up until the 60s, it was kind of taboo to say you wanted to leave or whatever. And they would put up with, you know, getting beaten and getting verbally abused and all this stuff. But it was just like, because of the way society was, you just had to kind of go, well, I guess this is what marriage is. My happiness is irrelevant. You know, and seeing the change in society now, you hear these people complain and sort of suggest again that somehow, you know, marriage is feeling, for example, is a terrible thing because the percentage is so high. I'm like, yeah, but What percentages of those marriages really should have been together, A, in the first place, or B, be together, and C, why are they still together? Do they actually enjoy each other's company still? Do they enjoy, you know, watching the same movies? Do they enjoy the same topics? Do they enjoy a conversation? Do they still enjoy each other physically? You know, that these are important things.
Yeah, Larry. I've heard people express it, and I think it's might be a good idea to have marriage contracts that are renewable every 2 years.
Oh, interesting.
You say, I'm not going to renew. You watch it. I'm not going to renew.
You know, I've always said, like, a lot of people will throw out, you know, divorce rates in America are like rising, or they're getting high, or they're too high, right? And I've always had the impression of divorce is a good thing in the sense that it's solving a problem. Right? Like, if two consensual people don't want to consensually be married to each other anymore, let the adults do what they want to do, whether it's, you know, union or disembark on that. What's the opposite of union, Dredd? You're my word guy. What's the opposite? Disjoin? Disconnect?
Now you put me on the spot.
All right. He's the Mensa guy. He just said, I'm Mensa. I'm like, what's the word? He's like, I don't know about words, man. I just got the card. I'm like, all right, fine. Disconnect. Right. But you should be able to do that, because it's good for families when there's, especially for kids who are like, might be stuck with parents who like are constantly being bitter with each other. Like, hey, split up, be happy. And if it works out, if you want to come back together again, come back together again. If you're happy with other people, be happy with other people. But don't drag me through this relationship that you guys don't even want to be in at the same time, too.
Disillusion.
Divorce is solving problems. Disillusion.
Disillusion.
Love
not
it.
Disillusion. Disillusion.
Disillusion. Disillusion.
Disillusion.
Disillusion. All right.
Like dissolve.
That was the example with my family, just so you know, Tyrone. Yeah. My mom and dad split up when I was 14, and it was the best thing that happened to our family in every way. My mom got her romantic relationship that she wanted. My dad kind of got his freedom back. We got to continue with the life we'd always known, but have two happy parents instead of just one.
Exactly.
And that's something that you only maybe understand later in life, that your parents are people too.
Yes.
You know, that's something that was very hard for me to realize. And I was like, wait a minute, my mom was just a young teenage girl once who had all these hopes and dreams. So was my dad. And they ended up together and had us, but they're still people, and their lives didn't.
Your parents are individuals too.
Yes.
You know, they have their own traits, their own likes, their own habits, their
things. And that feeds into growing pains, because you could live your entire life thinking, oh, my parents are these super powerful beings, infallible in every way. Or you can grow up realizing, oh, they were just like me when now that I'm at this age, and they're still just as capable as making as many faults, and that they're people. And even though I'm a person, they're a person too. And like, that colors the entire perception of how I think about authority or people in authority in my life, as well as why I should care about people, because they're just like me at the same time too, even if they're older, right?
Tying that into religion, Tyrone, is I try to remind myself that the people who are indoctrinating their kids actually think they're doing the right thing by them. I try to remind myself of that, even though some of them I think are just, you know, maybe not. There's obviously some bad actors out there, but essentially I feel like most people are trying to instill good morals and principles in their kids, which is what I'm trying to do, just from a completely maybe more objective or subjective point of view. But I try to not get too mad at people when I see that, because I realize that that's what their goal is, and it's an honest goal. It just leads to, it just leads to a perpetual bad state, if you want to call it that.
Right, right. I have, so for example, a quick story. I have a friend named Aaron. He is a guy who I like to hang out with, invited him to his family or his house many times. Questioned me on my atheism, and then eventually told me, you know, I don't celebrate you, but I will let you hang out with my family. Just don't be an atheist around my daughter. And I'm like, so like, I was already being an atheist around your daughter, because I wasn't necessarily worshiping God left and right. Right. So like, I didn't say that to him, but like, what does that even mean to a person who's name is from the Bible, who has parents whose names are from the Bible, who has grandparents whose names are from the Bible, who grows up in a Bible belt, right? Who is also homeschooled by family who taught him from the Bible, like has sisters who have biblical names. He never had a chance to think anything else. So I can't hate him or fault him for being afraid of people who are different, who come to Tennessee from outside his, you know, echo chamber and just be themselves. And that's not within his framework of understanding. I don't blame him for having that. However, in the same way that I won't fault being angry or mad at him because I know he's just trying to do the best he can for his family, I also have to recognize that I have a higher standard for myself with the people that I can be with and the people that I can hang out with. And if you value yourself, I say, hold yourself to that higher standard and just say, it's good that I have friends that don't want to celebrate me. And I have friends that do want to celebrate me. When I have free time, I'm going to choose the ones that do celebrate me. No diss against the people that don't, but I got only a limited amount of time. I'm going to spend it wisely. Right.
Exactly.
I got an email yesterday I wanted to discuss, which is exactly about that point, Tyrone. It was a disappointing email from a fan. And it was basically like, I've been a fan of yours for 15 years. I love everything you do, blah, blah, blah. But then you started this podcast. It was one of those things, right? And it was very much a, you know, I can't follow you now and I will actively make a point of not seeing anything that you do, et cetera, et cetera. I'm very disappointed that you would feel it's okay to voice that opinion in public type of a thing. And so I responded privately. And I basically explained to her, like, who was had the moral high ground on this decision. I was like, what you feel to realize is that the entire time you've been a fan of mine, I have thought this way and openly expressed it and never once hidden it. And I said that the person that you've been a fan of and celebrated all this time has thought the exact things that you've heard me say on that podcast this whole time. It hasn't changed who I am as a person to people. It has the person that you liked and the person that you've celebrated was an atheist and is an atheist and is proud of it.
Yep.
Yeah,
and
the fact that
you're aware of it now does not change who I was before. And saying that you're not going to follow me now because I openly express it, even though I always have and never hidden it my entire life. It's like, do you realize it's like, I don't tell you not to come to my concerts because you're a Christian. Right?
Yeah,
you see the difference there? Who's on the moral high ground? Sorry, Larry.
No, I think that his friend is basically just telling him to shut up about it around his daughter. That's all he's really doing. I mean, don't be an atheist. You can't stop being an atheist around her. It's like he stopped existing. Yeah. But he's just saying, don't talk about it around her.
Not that atheism is a positive position anyway, right?
Yeah.
It's not like you're making a claim about something. It's that you don't have evidence to support a claim that others are making. So saying not to be an atheist, does that mean you have to believe in God while you're hanging around his daughter?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'll throw one last thing out and then we got to end the show. He also was speaking to that about both my atheism and my asexuality. And like in the back of my head, I'm like, so what do you want me to do? Start hitting on your wife?
Just stop coming around.
I'm guaranteed. I'm much more physically fit than you. I make more money than you. Are you guaranteeing that you'd want me to stop? You want me to just start hitting on your wife now? I don't understand it. I don't get it. But again, I have higher standards of friends like you guys. I'm happy to hang out with you, Larry. Go on ahead, and I see you cutting off your neck. Let's wrap up the
show.
We're
running out of time pretty quickly here.
Okay.
This is the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. You can find this show on podcasts everywhere. Just search for Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. If you're watching this on YouTube, be sure to like and subscribe. If you're having trouble leaving religious beliefs behind, you can get help at recoveringfromreligion.org. You can find my book, Atheism, What's It All About, on Amazon. Remember, everybody is going to somebody else's hell. The time to worry about it is when they prove that heavens and hells and souls are real. Until then, don't sweat it. Enjoy your life, and we'll see you next Wednesday night at 7 o'clock. Say bye, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
Bye. Bye.